Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping straight into something pretty huge. Security experts are calling it a historical rupture in the digital Iron Curtain. We're talking about the massive fallout from the Great Firewall breach back in September 2025. It really sent shockwaves, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. A truly seismic event. But, you know, not like your typical data breach. This was enormous, over 500 gigabytes of internal files. And crucially, these files came straight from the heart of a major state-run censorship and surveillance system.
Right, and that's the key point. This wasn't like customer lists or passwords. This was the technical DNA. The source code itself, the config files, the manuals, basically the entire blueprint for how this massive digital filtering operation actually works.
Exactly. It's kind of ironic, isn't it? The system built for total opacity, for filtering everything out, suddenly laid bare for the whole world to see and pick apart. So, our mission today for you listening is really to unpack what this unprecedented access tells us about how large-scale state censorship operates at, like, the network level. And maybe more importantly, how technicians and researchers worldwide are already taking this knowledge, this insight, and using it to build better countermeasures to improve digital freedom.
Okay, let's get into this data set then. 500 gigabytes, the number alone, is staggering. But analysts seem to agree it's the kind of files that makes this revolutionary. What exactly was in there?
It was incredibly comprehensive. You had the actual source code for the filtering modules, detailed configuration scripts, real-time traffic monitoring logs, and even these very specific technical manuals laying out administrative procedures. It really is the whole playbook for network control.
And it's important to stress how this data got out, right? This wasn't some quick hack, was it?
No, not at all. The analysis suggests the data was methodically curated. That points away from a simple vulnerability exploit. It strongly suggests either a very knowledgeable insider, someone with deep access across multiple systems, or maybe a long-term, meticulous external operation that gathered this bit by bit. We're talking internal emails, work logs, detailed network diagrams made in Visio, the sort of stuff that shows planning and deep internal knowledge.
Right, the operational evidence. So let's talk specifics. For the network folks, the analysts, what was the real technical gold in this leak? What made them sit up and take notice?
Oh, the absolute jackpot for defensive analysts. That'd be the packet captures and those infamous black hole routing tables. Packet captures are like microscopic recordings of network traffic. They show you byte by byte exactly what the censorship system sees when someone tries to connect to, say, a block site or a VPN.
So you get the sensor's point of view on that traffic, even if it's encrypted.
Precisely. And the black hole routing tables. They show exactly how traffic gets intercepted, maybe redirected, or just vanished, dropped into a black hole without any notification back to the user.
That's chilling.
It is. The user just sees their connection fail or timeout. They have no idea it was deliberately killed off by the state. That silence, that lack of feedback, is maybe the most sophisticated censorship there is.
Yeah. So you're seeing the mechanism behind the ghosting, not just the block itself. Okay, beyond the routing, the leak apparently included raw identifiers used for detection. What about those internal Excel files?
Yeah, this is where it shifts from analyzing the network pipes to analyzing behavior. These documents contained incredibly sensitive lists. They had lists of known VPN identifiers, specific DNS query patterns that popular evasion tools tend to use, and even things like SSL certificate fingerprints linked to proxy services.
Hold on, SSL certificate fingerprints, that's normally for security, for authentication. How are they using that to block things?
They were building profiles. See, when a common tool like Siphon or maybe Tor sets up an encrypted connection, it has certain characteristics the way it handles the SSL handshake, the type of certificate it might present. By gathering these unique fingerprints and patterns, they weren't just blocking IP addresses anymore. They were building these heuristic behavior profiles. The system essentially learned to spot the signature of circumvention tools based on subtle behaviors, even inside encrypted traffic. It's detection by habit, you could say.
That's incredibly sophisticated. Which brings us to the learning opportunity here. This is the technical gold mine, right?
Yeah.
Now that defenders have these signatures, what can they actually start reverse engineering?
Well, pretty much everything related to detection. They can now really study the deep packet inspection, the DPI modules. These are the bits of hardware and software that peek inside data packets. Before, we had theories, educated guesses about how their DPI could spot VPNs or proxies even when encrypted. Now, they have the source code. They know exactly what fields they're looking at, what algorithms they're using.
So they can see the logic. But you'd think a system this centralized, this well-funded, would be pretty consistent, right? Did the leak show any weaknesses there?
That's a really interesting point. The data actually suggests some potential structural vulnerabilities. Analysts are looking closely at the network policies. Specifically, they're studying rule propagation delays. How long does it take for a new censorship rule to actually be active everywhere? And is it consistent across different regions?
Ah, so if a block takes, say, 4 hours to kick in somewhere, but only minutes elsewhere.
Exactly. That delay, that inconsistency, points to a weakness in how they push out updates. That four-hour window, maybe, becomes a verifiable opportunity for resistance tools to adapt or users to connect. It's a choke point we could only guess at before.
So the leak reveals both the strength of their detection and potential weaknesses in deployment. But it also showed they were actively fighting back against resistance tools, didn't it?
Oh, relentlessly. One of the most revealing and, frankly, alarming finds was evidence of dedicated sandbox environments. And these weren't just general testing areas. They were specifically set up and run just to analyze and figure out how to break popular evasion tools, things like ShadowSocks, V2Ray, Siphon.
That shows a serious level of commitment, doesn't it? It's not just passive blocking. It's active R&D to defeat the tools people use to get around the blocks.
It really demonstrates that they view these circumvention tools as a significant threat, enough to dedicate permanent research efforts to countering them.
So if we were to take a snapshot of that internal technical arsenal based on the leak, what kinds of tools are we talking about?
Okay, well, we saw the details of their traffic shaping modules. These are tools that don't just block, but throttle or redirect traffic based on those behavioral heuristics we mentioned. So maybe your VPN connects, but it's slowed down so much it's unusable as traffic shaping. We also saw their VPN detection lists, which went way beyond just IP addresses. They were looking at traffic volume patterns, connection frequencies, that sort of thing.
And the encrypted traffic analysis.
That seemed to be handled by specific SSL certificate analysis tools. Like we discussed, they weren't trying to brute force decrypt everything that's too resource intensive. Instead, they focused on the handshake, the metadata, at the start of the connection, looking for those telltale signs of a proxy trying to hide.
And the detail I found fascinating, bringing the human element back in, the leak didn't just expose the tech, it exposed the people, right? The metadata author trails.
Yes, the administrative breadcrumbs. The documentation captured who wrote what, revision histories, user accounts tied to policy changes or code updates. This let researchers basically map out the internal organization. You could see user accounts, author names, departmental structures, maybe even reporting lines.
So you didn't just get the machine's blueprint. You got a glimpse of the org chart running it. That kind of organizational intelligence mapping leads us straight into the global impact.
Absolutely. Because the implications here go way beyond just one country. Many authoritarian regimes around the world, they look at this kind of apparatus as the gold standard, the blueprint for digital control.
And the leak confirmed this blueprint isn't just being admired, it's being shared or even sold.
Yes, that was a really alarming finding. The sources point to this concept of censorship as a service. The technology and the know-how for sophisticated digital repression are being packaged and exported. It's not just selling software, it's transferring the operational knowledge, the policy frameworks, to help other regimes set up similar controls faster and more effectively.
Censorship as a service, that's a deeply unsettling phrase. Were specific countries named as recipients of these components or this knowledge?
The sources specifically mentioned Myanmar, Kazakhstan, Ethiopia, and Pakistan as countries reportedly involved in receiving components or expertise derived from this system. And that list is important because it signals a global urgency. The defensive community is now racing against the spread of these increasingly sophisticated, potentially interconnected systems of oppression.
Which is exactly where this leak becomes immediately actionable for the digital freedom folks. Knowing these internal detection methods, these signatures, that must be a game changer for tools like Tor or Siphon.
It's a huge advantage. Developers get this incredibly detailed, immediate insight into how the adversary operates. It means they can start modifying their tools right away to evade the patterns that are now known. They can work on better obfuscation, add more randomness into their traffic signatures.
Can you talk a bit more about that randomization? How does that counter those sophisticated heuristic profiles?
Well, if the sensor is looking for a very specific sequence or timing of packets, like a fingerprint for a tool like ShadowSocks, developers can introduce what's called polymorphic behavior. Basically, the tool changes its network signature, its digital fingerprint, constantly, maybe on every connection or even changing mid-session, it forces the sensor back to square one. They have to constantly try and figure out the new patterns, which is vastly more difficult and resource-intensive than blocking known signatures. It keeps the target moving.
And presumably, they can also beef up distributed routing to avoid those choke points, making the whole network more resilient. This leak really forces the sensors to rethink their detection strategies.
Precisely. It hands a significant asymmetric advantage back to the defenders, at least for now.
Okay, so let's pivot to the lessons learned for anyone managing critical infrastructure. Section 4, hardening lessons. Because the big question hanging over all this is, how? How does 500 gigabytes of your most sensitive internal data walk out the door?
Yeah, the leak highlights some really fundamental and frankly preventable security failures. These are lessons for everyone. The most obvious one seems to be a failure in strict access control, the principle of least privilege.
Meaning people should only have access to exactly what they need to do their job and absolutely nothing more.
Exactly. This breach strongly suggests that whoever extracted the data had broad red access across many different highly sensitive systems. Source code, log servers, configuration databases, maybe even HR data for the organizational mapping. That kind of broad, interconnected access is a huge red flag. It points to a major policy failure.
And the sheer size, 500 gigs, suggests a network architecture problem too, right? Like things weren't properly walled off from each other.
Absolutely. Proper network segmentation seems like it wasn't fully implemented or enforced. If one system gets compromised, it shouldn't automatically grant access to pull massive amounts of data from completely different internal areas. The scale of this suggests the data could move laterally inside the network pretty easily, maybe across a relatively flat network structure.
But surely moving that much data, 500 gigabytes, should have triggered some kind of alarm, even for someone with high privileges.
It absolutely should have. This points to a likely failure in using data loss prevention, or DLP, systems effectively. DLP tools are designed specifically to spot unusually large data transfers, especially involving sensitive file types or keywords, moving outside the network, or even being gathered together inside the network into large archives.
Ah, so the gathering stage internally is key.
It often is. And it seems there was a failure to encrypt sensitive backups properly, and critically, a failure to monitor the creation of large archive files, like .zip or .tar files, within sensitive environments. It looks like the adversary might have packaged everything up internally first before moving it out, and those crucial staging steps weren't flagged.
So the lesson isn't just about watching the perimeter for external attacks. You have to watch internal activity just as closely, especially privileged accounts.
That's the core takeaway, really. Organizations often use things like honeypots or sandboxes to catch external attackers. But this shows the need to use similar techniques to detect insider threats or anomalous behavior from internal accounts. Any single user accessing and archiving such a wide range of sensitive data should have set off major alarms.
These aren't just lessons for governments, are they? This applies to any large company handling sensitive IP or customer data. It's a huge warning sign.
Definitely. Now look, despite the incredible value of this leak for the good guys, we should acknowledge the challenges. Analyzing 500 gigabytes of complex, often proprietary data is a massive task. There are legal and ethical questions about using potentially stolen data, plus the very real risk of booby traps, malware hidden in the files meant to infect researcher systems.
Sure, those are real risks, but the opportunity seems to outweigh them here. This is like a digital earthquake, wasn't it? It revealed the how behind large-scale state surveillance in unprecedented detail. It's given the defense community a counter-blueprint that could really accelerate the development of freedom-enhancing tools.
It absolutely has. It's a once-in-a-generation learning opportunity that's fundamentally shifted the landscape.
Which leads us to our final thought for you, the listener. We've seen that even this incredibly sophisticated, heavily resourced surveillance system wasn't perfect. It was breached, likely from the inside. So what does this massive curated leak really teach us about that fundamental tension? The tension between centralization, which you need for total control, and actual security, which seems to demand decentralization and segmented access. The defenders now have the playbook. So what's the next big innovation we're likely to see from the digital freedom community now that they have this kind of unprecedented inside look? Something to think about.